What's up, sports fans? Welcome to another episode of Sports Odds and Ends, the show for the fly-by-night sports fan. I'm one of your hosts, King Cash, joined as always by my good friend and co-host, the one, the great JVZ.
I'm awake, Kaz. Liverpool, Manchester United almost put me back to sleep. But yeah, it's a good sports weekend, I would say. We got hockey back, a little drama, a little intrigue, all kinds of things going on. Yeah, in the middle of divisional rounds in the NFL, so a lot of stuff going on, a lot of active things. If you are anywhere outside of Houston, I think you're probably having a good time. If you're in Houston, you've got a franchise player trying to leave town, and no, I am not talking about Deshaun Watson. I am talking about James Harden, who has finally been traded to the Nets. I think the saga is finally over. He got what he wanted. We'll get into Deshaun Watson later, but for now, ever since the Astros cheated, like, nothing good has happened in Houston sports. You know, the Roughnecks were doing well, and then the XFL season got canceled, and then,
Man, you're going deep.
Yeah, I am. It's nothing good has happened in that city.
Let's circle back around to this, right? Because this thing has been a saga. The James Harden trying to get to the Nets, has been a saga, right? Like, we talked about how it was going to be a hard sell, right? Because obviously the Rockets don't want to give up. They didn't want to have to give up two big name players, right? Obviously they were okay giving up the one, but they didn't want to have to give up both. And now they're in a situation where they did. So James Harden is going to be going to the Nets. So obviously, in this, the Nets are going to receive James Harden.
And that's it.
Yeah. Whereas the Rockets receive a few things. And this also goes to a few things that this kind of messes up some other people in a sense and moves that they wanted to make. So Victor Oladipo is going to be going to the Rockets, which is not, according to the media, the destination he saw himself in. He was one of those names touted to be wanting to go to Miami or wanting he definitely wanted to no longer be in Indiana on the Pacers. Like, that was the big thing, right? But him on the Rockets now as probably the biggest name that's going to be on that team that I can think of without looking up the roster.
I feel like it's pretty balanced because you got John Wall, you got DeMarcus Cousins, Christian Wood is balling out. It's a team that in press conferences, it seems like everybody was bought in except for James Harden, and everybody on the team seemed very mad about that, to the point where it seemed like Harden was kind of getting kicked out just because everybody was so frustrated with him and the level of effort that he was putting in. So I don't know. I think, Victor Oladipo is not a guy that's going to approach an unhappy situation the same way James Harden will. Like, he'll put in the effort. So,
let's talk about this in whole parts. Cause I don't want to spend a quarter of our show time talking about this in individual pieces. Right. So we got Victor Oladipo, Dante
Exum.
Exum.
Okay. Yeah. He's, I think when he came into the league, I want to say like 4 years ago, he was kind of a highly touted rookie point guard from Australia, I think.
Okay.
The fact that I'm not sure about that is shows you how well he's managed to establish himself. It's kind of a journeyman. I think he started in Utah, sort of ended up in Cleveland and maybe a couple other spots along the way. Rodion Skurics, I think, who is a fairly useful piece for the Nets. I think the big
22 Latvian.
Yeah, I think the big haul here is the three unprotected first round picks.
Mm-hmm.
From
22, 24, 26.
Yeah, you cannot trade picks in consecutive years. You have to keep your first round pick. You have to keep a first round pick every other year. That's why it's alternated like that. That rule exists because of the Ted Stepien rule, which came from a long time ago when the Washington Bullets at the time completely screwed their own future by doing that, by trading like 8 years straight worth of first round picks. What you can do in the middle years in between is trade away pick swaps. Give the other team the right to swap picks with you. 2021, 2023, 2025, and 2027, the years in between, the Nets and, or sorry, the Rockets have the right to swap picks with the Nets if they want to.
And then there's a couple of other
before the guys get picked.
Yeah, because there's also a Bucks unprotected 2022 first round pick from the Cavs in this deal as well. So there's a lot of weird numeric like things with picks, because you never really know what your draft class is going to look like. Like that many years out, like 2026, 2027, 2025, those are kind of weird. The 2022, the 2021, people kind of have an understanding of what they're going to get in those draft classes. So you kind of have an understanding what you're pushing for there.
But don't have quite an understanding of where the teams that own those picks are going to finish in the standings as well. So that's what makes this a little bit enticing for the Rockets is the fact that those picks are unprotected. So if the Nets fall apart, then all of a sudden those picks become really good picks. And the Rockets are kind of on the same opposite situation as well, because they gave the Oklahoma City Thunder kind of the same situation when they traded for Russell Westbrook. So Oklahoma City is kind of sitting there waiting for both Houston and the LA Clippers and a bunch of other teams to potentially fall apart so that they can collect on these unprotected picks. Yeah. But for now, all these teams are pretty high up, are pretty good teams. So all these picks are pretty late, but the appeal is that maybe one of these teams is going to eventually crash, give you a good pick. Yeah. Crash and burn. Rockets kind of did. But I feel like they've also kind of retooled pretty well.
No, this is what I want to get into, right? Because to round out this deal, the Pacers and Cavs are also part of this deal in a lot of this swappage. That's why some of these picks are in here. The Pacers are going to get Caris LeVert, a 2023 pick in the second round from the Rockets. The Cavs, who I think kind of, kind of talk about this in whole parts, I think they come out on top a little bit.
They got in on this trade basically because they existed and they had cap space.
Mm-hmm.
All they had to give up was Dante Exum, which, as we just mentioned, we don't really know anything about.
Yeah. But they were going to be Jared Allen and
Taurean Prince. Prince is a fairly useful player, I would say. I think a useful wing / big hybrid. Jared Allen is a fantastic rim protector.
Oh yeah, yeah,
fantastic up and coming.
He's one of those players I didn't think Brooklyn was going to get rid of in whatever deal was going to happen. I thought he was going to at least be there at least through this year to kind of see out what was going to happen. But DJM
wants to bring up the fact that Spencer Dinwiddie somehow has survived another trade. Spencer Dinwiddie is kind of in that like middle zone of like he's a useful player with on a reasonable contract. So players like that tend to get traded a lot. He survived again. He's now on this Nets super team. But in the meantime, just on the Jarrett Allen front, he's kind of the heir apparent now to Andre Drummond's role for the Cavs. And so now that frees up the Cavs to trade away Andre Drummond's expiring contract at the deadline this year. So I think Cavs are quietly making some pretty good moves here to slowly bring their team back from the pit they fell into after LeBron left. Yeah. So,
So let's do this, right? Let's talk about everyone who isn't the Brooklyn Nets in this trade. I think the Cavs move up a little bit in what they have gotten and what they have done in this offseason, kind of going forward. I think they do have some good pieces. They still kind of skew a little bit older. Like you said, they are going to get rid of some more of these kind of waning contracts. They probably skew a little bit younger now. I think before the offseason, they skewed a little bit older. But now looking at them, they skew a little bit younger, which is probably what they want, right? They want to kind of be a young, hungry team looking to kind of make moves. Is it this year? I don't think so. I think they made a lot of moves, and it's going to still take a little bit of time for this team to find its center, so to speak, and really find out the type of basketball they want to play. And even if, because of now the conference that they are in or the region that they play in, they're going to come up against a lot of tough teams. In this kind of Eastern Hemisphere, and they're going to have to be able to prove themselves, and then that's where it kind of gets weird to figure out what this version of a Cavaliers team is going to be able to do without a LeBron.
They've been trying to figure that out for a while, and I feel like giving Kevin Love a massive contract kind of made that a bit more difficult.
I think you ended up with a situation where you do what you think is right, but at the end of the day, it's wrong for everyone, right? Because
they wanted to reward the guy who stayed.
Yeah, Kevin Love ended up unhappy. They ended up unhappy with the amount that they had to pay him over these last few years because they weren't able to attract anyone else to any other big names to come to this team because nobody wants to go to goddamn Ohio without a already like locked in superstar. So you kind of became a black hole in the void of everything else outside of having Kevin Love and Andre and an agent Andre Drummond. For them, you know, they've made some moves. It kind of has to play out in this season and see how they do. So they're on the list. They're on the list. They're on the watch list to kind of see what the Cavaliers can be. Their last few games, they've done okay. They beat the Knicks. I guess that's always a.
I think they're having fun again, I would say, because Sexton and Garland, the quote unquote sex land lineup, is kind of making waves, and they're having a lot of fun with that. So I think at least as long as basketball is fun again, then it can be tolerable. The losing can be tolerable. And then because at least the losing gets you good draft picks. Gotta wait a while for that to pan out, but as you can see, it's already kind of panning out with some of the younger guys that they have. So
let's get on that. The other big team in this trade being the Houston Rockets.
First off, let's do the Pacers first, since they only got a couple
of this year.
So they got Caris LeVert, who I think is one of the bright young talents from the Nets. Also, Caris LeVert is now out indefinitely after an MRI revealed a small mass on his left kidney. So, so that's, I don't know, very unfortunate timing. I'm pretty sure they knew about this when they made this trade. They didn't just get swindled or anything like that. Otherwise, they would be very mad. But I think, Caris LeVert for Victor Oladipo, that was kind of the side trade that ended up along with this that we're kind of bundling together.
Mm-hmm.
For a disgruntled Victor Oladipo, I would say he's pretty good return for that. He's obviously not as good as Victor Oladipo, but it's good to get a nice young player for somebody who was going to leave anyways. So I think it's decent return once Caris LeVert hopefully gets healthy. But for now, I guess we wish him all the best in his recovery. So now we can talk about the Rockets.
All right. So the Houston Rockets. like you said, John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, an aging DeMarcus Cousins. Got to throw that in there.
A returning DeMarcus Cousins with a vengeance, who is now seems to be healthy again after fighting injuries for the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Also an agent, John Wall.
Who, again, seems to be...
I'm not saying these are bad
players. He was before, but pretty close, a lot closer than I thought he would be. But both of them are 30 now, so so that's something to keep in mind. That the injuries might start stacking up more.
As a 30-plus-year-old man myself, I'm not saying 30 is old. I think most people hit that prime somewhere between 24 and 30, and can continue it into their 30s. So maybe being healthy, like you said, right? DeMarcus Cousins healthy and hungry. That's a scary matchup for a lot of people, right? I don't want to put that up against pretty much most anyone. And then you're going to be throwing a couple of more names in here. I think the one I focus on Victor Oladipo because I like Victor Oladipo. I think he's a good guy. I think he has a good basketball IQ, but we've talked about that not being the greatest intangible. It just sounds like a smart thing to say sometimes when you like a player who like isn't lights out. You kind of talk about their basketball IQ, but
I think that's if you use it as something to just fall back on to justify why the guy you like is better than somebody else, then sure. But I mean, I think you can tell like which players, you can tell which players have a feel for playing the game a little bit better. Yes. And Victor Oladipo definitely does. He's at least since he got to Indiana, he's demonstrated how useful of a player he can be. Not just useful, but like he can lead his team. And that's what he was for the Pacers. I don't know if he necessarily needs to be in that same to carry that same load for the Rockets. So that's kind of why I'm excited about this. Is this team just looks very balanced to me?
I think in a sense, he won't have to do as much, right? He won't have to do as much, but I think he's going to be the first option on scoring plays. Like it's looking at the lineup, thinking about the lineup. I think. He's going to be that first option because Boogie's biggest thing is low post and defense, right? That's kind of his thing. John Wall is a general. He's gonna call the plays. He's gonna pass the ball. Like he's the kind of point guard that you think of as a point guard, right? Like he doesn't need to have and control the ball to like control the floor, but when he does, it's a good thing.
Yeah. And when he can use his speed effectively, then he can he can blow by you and cause chaos.
Yeah, but he does have the point guard like thing down. He can lead the team. He can call the plays. He can set up the plays. He knows where to pass it, when to pass it, kind of a thing. He just hasn't always had people to pass it to necessarily in some of these other teams that he's been on, right? He hasn't had lights out shooters like he could get in Victor Oladipo and some of these other players. So I think all that being said, the Rockets are still kind of in a good place. I don't think they're necessarily any worse for wear. But that it all goes to show, right? You got to get all these players on the court and see how it works out. But speaking of that, getting all the players on the court and seeing how it works out, we move to the biggest one, the Brooklyn Nets. Somehow, some way, no one thought it was possible, but they got a trifecta. They put all the pieces together and built Exodia.
Yeah. Okay. So Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving, who, by the way, has been absent for, I guess, the last seven games, the first five games, because he kind of just didn't want to be there, or at least without really for personal reasons, I should say.
He did show up on a Zoom call or something for a local city council meeting or something like that.
Oh yeah, he did that, and then he was caught at a family, just on a social media post with a partying with his family. At a gathering that was larger than it was allowed to be. So he was fined $50,000 for violating COVID protocol for that. So he can't just rejoin the team. He has to go through COVID protocol, which as long as he tests, it continues to test negative, then that's a minimum 5-day absence, which caused him to miss two games in addition to the other games that he missed. So he doesn't get his game checks for that. So that's the $50,000 fine plus $900,000 in missed game checks. So that's quite a bit of money to spend for his absence, I should say. I don't want to make any determinations on what the reasoning was for all this. But towards the end of it, people, at least the media, was jumping all over it and questioning whether Kyrie Irving should just retire if he doesn't want to be there. So that's that was the kind of anger that was being felt towards the end of this little mini saga. And then right at the end of that, that's when the James Harden trade happened. So just the timing of that kind of switched the narratives of everything. Also just weird timing on the Harden trade, is it happened just at the same time that the impeachment vote happened. So Twitter was a really, really weird experience at around that time, in the middle of the day. So,
so we've gotten to see, I think, one game, with James Harden on this team so far.
In which he, I guess, scored the first ever 30-point triple double on a debut game in NBA history. So, I mean, I know that's a weird cherry pick stat, but he seemed to have been sandbagging his time in Houston to convince them to trade him. 14 assists, by the way. Thank you to DJM for pointing that out. He's certainly fitting in with the team. And just to be clear, this is him and Kevin Durant. Kyrie Irving is still out. But at least Kyrie Irving has demonstrated that he is on the way to come back, and going through all the motions to do that. So we should see all three of these guys together on the court within the next week, so we'll be able to assess how well they all fit together. I think the question is, all three of these players are pretty ball dominant. So
here's the thing, right? And I want to get into this, and I like the DJM gives us the kind of the reasoning to point out the 14 assists, right? James Harden is very ball dominant, right? He wants to work with the ball. He wants to a majority of the time bring the ball up court. Kevin Durant is one of these guys that if he's feeling it, he wants the ball, right? He may not necessarily want to bring the ball up court, but he wants you to hit him in his spot so he can work, right? Like if he's really feeling it, he wants you to get that ball to him quickly, right?
And everything that we've ever said about mid-range jumpers and them being inefficient, ignore all that when it comes to Kevin Durant. If he's in the mid-range, you get him the ball and you let him work. Because he can hit those shots efficiently. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
That's a good point, right? And that's why that's like that. Whereas like Kyrie Irving is probably he is very ball dominant, but I think he falls into the same description that we kind of put on John Wall, right? He likes to see the floor. He likes to work the ball. He likes to kind of run his plays. He's that kind of guy, right? He wants to read the defense a little bit first before things happen, or he allows things to happen, or he makes things happen.
But you guys know what you're describing? You're describing point guards.
Kyrie Irving, that's literally what they do. There's also the Russell Westbrooks of the world who just take the ball and they're the first option, the last option, and the second option.
which neither Harden nor Kyrie are.
Right.
I think Harden kind of got that reputation. I don't know if it was necessarily deserved, because some guys fall into that mindset if they are the number one option. Mm-hmm.
Wasn't that mostly the Mike D'Antoni offense? Isn't that mostly what that was? How James Harden got that reputation?
And by the way, Mike D'Antoni is the assistant coach on this Nets team.
Great too. Keep Steve Nash in your thoughts and prayers.
First of all, I don't think Mike D'Antoni is gonna. He's certainly not going to engineer, his way back to the top job like this. I think he legitimately wants to be there to support his former player. But back to the ball dominant thing. That entire offense was designed around James Harden in Houston, because he is such an efficient player, because he is such a good shooter. It makes sense to funnel the ball towards James Harden. Now that he's got pieces around him of equivalent efficiency and equivalent quality, I think he can spread that out a little bit more. But I almost feel like, at least according to him, he dominated the ball because he needed to, because that was the best thing to do. But he can be unselfish if he needs to, if it works better for the team, according to him. And so obviously he's a little bit biased, and we'll have to see how well it works. All these guys are capable of being passers if they need to. But then again, Kevin Durant was on the Warriors on a fantastic passing team. And he left because he didn't feel like he was getting enough shine. And
that's what I was going to say. I think at the end of the day.
And VZ, let me ask you something about KD and the Warriors.
Yeah.
Wasn't he the primary option in that entire era he was there? Like, didn't Steph and Clay pretty much make sure that he was the primary option?
Yes.
They tried to.
I would say so. They definitely did. And I think they did that. That was beneficial to them too, because both of them are fantastic off-ball players. So they recognized that, making Kevin Durant the first option made it so that they got way better shots. And also didn't have to carry as much of the load, which meant they could play less and last longer throughout the season. Like, that was tremendously beneficial to their team. I don't know why he left. It's He was in a perfect situation.
No, so here's the thing, right? And then this is what I was going to say. Of all three of these guys, I don't have a problem with Kyrie Irving. I don't have a problem with James Harden, right? Like, I think, like you said, right, the rap James Harden has comes from the style of basketball they had to play, not the style of basketball he necessarily wants to play, right? Same thing with Kyrie Irving. I don't think Kyrie Irving has ever necessarily on the basketball court had a bad rap about his style of basketball.
Yeah.
I think if anything, the biggest question mark on this team is Kevin Durant, right?
And I Kevin disagree, Durant, Cass. Day-to-day. I disagree.
No, because a majority of people have said, at the end of the day, it's his personality, right? It's if he's not feeling it, he can kind of be like a problematic teammate.
All of the things that you're saying about Kevin Durant is exactly how I feel about Kyrie Irving. And it's how I felt since the Cavaliers days. And the fact that it basically died on the vine in Boston, in his run in Boston. Like, all of the things you're saying, I think Kyrie Irving has already proven and shown that he's not the most reliable teammate. He can get an attitude when things don't go his way. And for me, I have less of an issue with Kevin Durant, and I have no issue with James Harden at all. But for me, it's Kyrie Irving. VZ, which one of these three do you not like?
if Kevin Durant is disgruntled, you're not going to notice it on the court. And I think that's the point you're trying to make, DJM. If Kyrie Irving is disgruntled, he might not even show up to the court. If James Harden is disgruntled, we saw what just happened. Yeah, a lot of question marks, but I do feel like Kyrie Irving is the weakest link off the court. On the court, if they're all there, I think they'll find a way to make it work because they're all. I want to say that, you know, having multiple capable passers on the team, I think people often underrate it, just even if they are ball dominant people, if they're capable passers, I think they tend to find a way to make it work. I think Westbrook is kind of the exception just because he gets tunnel vision sometimes. But I just realized, guys,
this is the reason why Spencer Dinwiddie is staying on the Nets, because he's going to be the guy that will get all of these guys involved. It's going to be Spencer Dinwiddie. I'm calling it right now. Next year when he comes back, Spencer Dinwiddie is going to be the sixth man on this team.
I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on the role players on this team in general, because they are going to be the ones that have to, if these guys start getting mad about how many touches they're getting, then it's going to be on the role players to kind of shuffle the ball around and make sure that all these guys stay happy. Maybe running around in a high powered offense that's, you know, similar to, you know, a Mike D'Antoni style offense, a Mike D'Antoni, Steve Nash style offense. Maybe that is what helps keep them happy. Maybe if they play at such a high pace, they can get the amount of touches that they expect. And, you know, just because everybody has more touches in general. And so it could work. This could be fantastic. I feel like the floor of this team is Eastern Conference Finals. And it'll, like, whether this team gels, that'll be the difference between whether they advance to the NBA Finals and defeat the Lakers in the championship, or whether they bomb out in the Eastern Conference Finals. But if they fall apart, I think that's where they're falling apart. That's just the talent floor on this team right now. Assuming Kyrie Irving is still there.
It's an all-or-nothing team.
It's for a team with this kind of talent level, with that kind of talent floor, it still feels very risky. And not for necessarily basketball reasons either. So I think if this team has basketball problems, it'll be somewhat similar to Oklahoma City. When they made the finals, that was a good team, but you know, just not quite good enough at working together in order to beat
two of these players.
Yeah. Even the one with three of these, or sorry, even the one with two of these players and Russell Westbrook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. Like two of these players were on that team.
Yeah. And, by the way, all three of those players have now paired up at different points in their career.
Yeah.
So it's like the NBA's version of the Shield. Just everybody winning tag teams with each other. I think that Oklahoma City team was very talent loaded, and it was just the cohesion that I think was the difference between them and beating the Miami Heat at the time. So, I'm intrigued at least. And I guess I'm somewhat excited to see a contender emerge to the Lakers. I'm less excited that it's these three particular personalities that are getting the opportunity to do that. I'm not that excited about Harden forcing his way out of town when he's disgruntled. But I also understand wanting to get the hell out of Houston and that ownership group. So I got a lot of mixed feelings and a lot of uncertain predictions surrounding this entire trade and this entire situation. So,
yeah.
Also another fun fact, the Brooklyn Nets have traded away every single one of their first round, every single one of their own first round picks in every season between the year 2014 and the year 2027, except for one, the one pick that they spent that they used themselves was the one they used to draft Jared Allen, who they just traded away in this trade. So throughout multiple different GM regimes, they have basically wheeled and dealed away all of their first round picks. They were doing a pretty good job of building from the ground up, which is what you and I like, Kaz.
Yeah.
And then they threw all that away. They got a massive haul for throwing all that away, but we'll have to wait and see how well all that works out. Last time they did it, where they traded all those people for an aging Kevin Durant and an aging Paul Pierce, that backfired massively. All those unprotected first round picks that they traded away ended up just making the Celtics what they are today. So it's
always a rough situation, right? Because you kind of have to see how these things go. And what I want is, I know, because I just looked at it, I know the Nets have a game coming up against the Bucks, but I don't think Kyrie's going to be available still yet for that one. But it's going to be those kind of games, right? It's going to be them versus the Bucks. It's going to be them versus the Clippers, them versus the Lakers, them versus the Heat, where you really want to see when they have the trifecta on the court, how they really deal with those teams that have in the last few seasons shown that they are ready to compete for a championship, right? With the Lakers being the most dominant of it because they won in the last season. So
it shouldn't be underrated how important the Lakers role players are. And mm-hmm. I think like this part of why this is such a good Lakers team, not just because they have Anthony Davis and LeBron James, but because all their role players work so well with those guys. Mm-hmm. And then they replace some of those role players with better role players this offseason, with guys like Marc Gasol. And so the Nets traded away a bunch of useful role players in this trade.
As much as I don't like LeBron, the one thing I will give him, right, is his understanding of other people's ability.
Yes.
That
man has enough brain power to run the other four players on the team if he needed to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like his sense of like who he wants to play with, where and when, is pretty damn good. Like I will give him that. Like him and whatever development team he has that is just running stats and all day, like it, they're just really good at what they do to do that kind of stuff. So you know what? Like I will give him that. Of all the things that I shit on LeBron for, that is the one thing I will give to that man. It's the only thing I will give to that man.
Harsh.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Let's move away from basketball. Let's talk a little bit about the NFL because we are in the playoffs. Playoff football, best time of year.
Yeah. So yesterday, we're recording on a Sunday. Yesterday, Bills defeated the Ravens. The Packers defeated the Rams. I think we're all happy for Josh Allen. DJ, yeah, probably happier than the rest of us. You're probably happy that the Ravens lost, because then you don't have to hear about everybody around you talking about the Ravens.
No. Because I have to hear it no matter what. Like, no, there's no happy medium here, right? Like, if they win, I have to hear about how they won. If they lose, it starts to turn into the blame game, right? Because, like I said, this is the show for the Fly By Night sports fans. We are at the precipice that now. Lamar Jackson is trash here in Baltimore. The number one consensus is Lamar Jackson is trash, which has turned into me defending Lamar Jackson from his own city, and going, "You people,
hey Cass,
are hey Cass, lost. Yes,
hey Cass, you want to trade Matthew Stafford and Lamar Jackson with a pick?" You want to do it?
No, because I don't think I can defend Matthew Stafford as well as I can defend Lamar Jackson from his own his own city. I can at least be like, no, it's your play calling. Your play calling is hot garbage. Stop running the same four plays.
Greg Roman, he's good for 1 year, and yeah, then once everybody figures out his run scheme, then it's over.
VZ. Stafford for Jimmy Garoppolo and a pick?
No, late pick. I will get into who I want to replace Jimmy Garoppolo later because I'm excited about that prospect.
I'm going
to
keep trying. I'm going to keep trying, guys. I'm going to keep trying.
A couple weeks ago, I would have taken that, but different opportunities have opened up. All right. The one seed Packers defeated the Rams pretty handily, I would say.
Aaron Rodgers still got some years in him, I think.
Yeah.
He's still doing his thing. He's a playoff quarterback.
Yeah, imagine if they drafted him some weapons in the first round last year.
All right, hold on, I was drinking something. Don't do that.
He had supposedly a disgruntled offseason, but he came out and he balled out, and so now he's his team is going to play the winner of the Bucks and Saints later today. I think that's kind of the marquee matchup of the weekend because you've got Tom Brady versus Drew Brees. Drew Brees has said he's going to retire, I think, after this season. So this is his last run. But both these guys are over 40. A lot has been made about that matchup. A ton of Photoshops of these guys, you know, looking like they're in their 60s. Both those guys have been having a lot of fun with each other on social media as well. So I think they're enjoying their twilight years of their careers.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you got the fact that this is a divisional rivalry. I think and then just on top of that, just the stakes of this game for a shot at the Packers in the NFC Championship game. Meanwhile, in the other game that is about to start, the Browns versus the Chiefs, we talked last week about the Browns being ransacked by COVID, and that didn't seem to faze them at all. They dropped nearly 50 points on the Pittsburgh Steelers. They came out and balled out and rallied around and gave up a lot of points too, but they knocked out their divisional and a traditional rival as well last week. So they showed that that they certainly belong, and at the city of Cleveland is having a good time right now.
Yeah, look, I messaged Drew and I was like, why is your city not on fire celebrating the fact that the Browns are in the playoffs and making it this deep? He didn't give me a good answer. I mean not literally, like there's enough shit going on.
Pretty on fire.
But you know, I like I said, no matter what, I am excited about this Browns team now. And I think they should be too. I think they are definitely looking looking really good, man. Like they
exceeded expectations at this point. And if they lose here to the Chiefs, nobody's going to be mad about that. You just lost to the chosen one. So
that's... yeah, like I don't expect them to make it past the Chiefs, mostly because the Chiefs were my pick to make it all the way.
And also because Ben Roethlisberger lit them up last week, and Patrick Mahomes is like twice the quarterback Ben Roethlisberger is right now. So Patrick Mahomes can tear up the best defenses in the NFL, and they can take this Browns defense and just destroy them. So, DGM brings up that Ben Roethlisberger, that I think that might have been his last game as well. So, Eli Manning retired last year. Ben Roethlisberger might be retiring this year. Philip Rivers maybe as well. So that might be, this might be the sunset year for that particular quarterback class, that tremendously talented quarterback class. Rivers does have a lot of kids, but he also got paid $25 million for this 1 year this year.
He
so
go into TV. He has a TV face.
Does he?
Yeah. I think he does.
Okay.
Yeah, he's got that Alabama accent, though.
Well, he can do TV.
You put him on Alabama college thing. Football. You don't put him on
done.
NFL football.
Done. Yeah, he'd be great for college. Yeah. That'd be perfect.
Yeah. All right. So look, I'm picking the Chiefs out of the Browns Chiefs game, and then I think on the other side, I'm going to give it to the Bucks.
All right. Also, I totally spelled Bucks wrong there. I did the basketball Bucks, not the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
I'd give the basketball Bucks a better chance.
I mean, I feel like this Bucks Saints matchup is pretty equal. This Bucks team came in with a lot of fanfare.
Two quarterbacks who aren't running anywhere. They're going to throw it. So,
yeah.
Secondary matchups.
You know, you kind of, I have to give it to the healthier quarterback, which I think at this point is Tom Brady, because Drew Brees is still running around with a couple broken ribs. And, so I got to give it to the Bucks. And I'm also picking the Chiefs because don't pick against the Chiefs. DJM, who do you got?
I've got the Chiefs who don't bet against them. And as far as the AFC goes, for all forgiveness to my NFC North brethren, I'm kind of rooting for the State Farm Bowl. I'm rooting for the Packers because I want the State Farm Bowl, and I want Jake from State Farm to get the bag.
Also, I believe the Super Bowl is being played in State Farm Stadium, so like all kinds of sponsorship opportunities there if all three of those things converge. So we got potential meme time on our hands. And on that note, let's talk about the Nickelodeon game that we watched last week.
I saw just, a lot of highlights of it. It seemed weird to me, but everybody else seemed really into it.
So I think first of all, the game itself was fucking terrible, but I feel like the gimmicks were kind of enough to keep everybody, at least the interests in the gimmicks, were enough to keep everybody interested throughout the game. So, like, if this was a weekly thing that they did every week, maybe it would get old by the second week.
No,
this was great. This was fantastic. The commentary team, Noah Eagle and Nate Burleson, did a great job of explaining things happening in the game. Because most of the time, most regular people, most adults, don't know what the hell is happening in a game of NFL football. So they did a really good job at that. And Nate Burleson, especially, throwing in Nickelodeon references to everything that was happening in the game, that was really good. And Noah Eagle, a second-generation play-by-play man, in what seemed to be his debut in an NFL game, was really solid and really good. So
that wasn't the part I had a problem with.
This was fun. Gabrielle Green and Lex Lumpkin, they were there because they worked for Nickelodeon. Nickelodeon.
That I don't necessarily... I'm mixed on because I get what they were trying to do, and I think they wanted to put kind of a control in there, just like, okay, this is somebody who knows nothing about this. I believe this was Gabrielle Green's first experience at an NFL game, period. So I
and
think she came
what
in knowing
I loved,
nothing.
I loved and, that, like Fox, like CBS... Nickelodeon had their own kind of network sideline reporter for the NFL. So, in concept, I thought it was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not the execution.
No,
maybe
so
not the execution.
What I was going to say is, overall...
By the way, these guys are kids.
Yeah, no, overall, I think there was a lot of good, and there is a lot to learn from, and there is a lot that I think they could make better if like JVZ said, they don't run the same bits in the ground to death. I even enjoyed the concept of having the kid explain penalties. I just hated the kid they chose.
not young Sheldon. Sheldon was
like,
a bad
literally that was it. But like everything else conceptually, I think was great. I think it was a great idea. I just wish they chose a better kid for that. No disrespect to that kid, because he's banking, but like I just wish there was a better kid to choose for that.
Nobody likes young Sheldon.
The problem is
okay, so I know nothing about him.
It's a Big Bang. It's just the continuing CBS's. Is it CBS? I think it's CBS.
Yeah, yeah. Like, just the Viacom CBS. Property. Yeah,
yeah. To make money off of Big Bang Theory, like that. Right. That's what that is. They just want to continue making money off of Big Bang Theory, so they made a spinoff show.
But in concept, having something pop up and explain the penalty is, mm-hmm.
Don't you wish the NFL had that normally?
Yeah, absolutely. Throwing to Mike Pereira, I feel like the way they normally do it now just makes it seem like football is really fucking hard to understand, because you shouldn't have to throw to a rules expert for basic to tell you what a fucking catch is.
But nobody knows what a catch is.
Yeah. I mean, so that's a problem on its own. But it's like when you have to highlight the fact that your rules are really hard to understand, then that's a fundamental problem. But if you can bring somebody out there to simplify it down, and then it says, actually, this rule isn't that complicated. It might be written complicated, but it's actually kind of simple. That's what those little pop-ups kind of helped do.
Yeah.
And so that's useful.
Because I think in comparison, right, it's the way that it's done, right? In the everyday NFL, it's your two fuddy-duddy announcers, and they go, hey, Mike, why are we talking about this catch? Well
guys, you see, the receiver, he had his left foot down when the ball was in his hands, but it's about making a football move to completely execute the process, so he has to actually maintain control of the ball and execute a complete football move before hitting the ground or going out of bounds.
Yeah. Let's take a look at it again, and you tell me where that football move might be here. So,
okay, see, now, this angle right here, this isn't the best angle. If we can get the guys to get that behind angle, if we can get that one, see, there it is. There it is, right there. He's got control of the ball. He's got control of the ball, and his left foot is down. And then you see the right foot is still in bounds, just about. So he's maintaining control. He's completing the process. But then he did not execute a football move, and then he still falls out of bounds, so it's not a catch.
Yeah. So in the young Sheldon version of this, he'd be out there saying, once you catch the ball, you got to do something with the ball to show that you've got control of it, and that would be enough.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's the kind of thing that's missing.
Yeah.
Is you've got football insiders, people who have experienced so much of the game, have been so immersed in the game that they're completely divorced from the fact that the game that they are so used to is so goddamn hard to understand.
They suffer from the same problem we sometimes have. They overtalk simple concepts.
they're not talking to the fly-by-night people. So I feel like this Nickelodeon broadcast was a great fly-by-night broadcast. I think they overdid. This is me from the perspective of I'm an adult who thinks he knows what kids like. And I feel like some of it might have been overdoing the talking down to the kids.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I'm not a kid. So maybe I'm, it's been 20 years since I was in the age group that it was the target audience for this. So
I honestly chose to defer to Nate Burleson on this one because he came off very much like a dad through all of this. So
yes.
I figured he was talking to the kids like a dad who knows football would talk to his kids.
And I think that's a good concept to do for something like this, right? Like, I think you remove kind of the fuddy-duddy, like we talked about, like in our play that me and DJM will be doing in your town pretty soon. You remove that sense of it, and you add familiarness to a unfamiliar concept, like. And I think that was great. I think all those bits of it were really good.
Yeah,
exceptional.
And I think if I make it sound like they overdid it, I think they got close enough that they can make adjustments for next year and the year after that. And if this is
Luke, this, you get this rid is of young yearly Sheldon, thing, I'll watch it every year.
Yeah, I'm definitely watching this every year. I mean, it was good enough that I tuned in for an entire game, which I don't normally do for other games, period. And on top of that, this was a very boring one-sided game as well. And I still stayed to the end. There's a couple little kinks they need to work out with, maybe the voting for the Nickelodeon Valuable Player Award.
No, that was perfect. That was perfect.
It was perfect. It was hilarious that Mitchell Trubisky won that. But I think it's all... They got to protect that a little bit from the trolls because people are going to totally troll that.
Guys, for me, maybe it's just because I live in Detroit, but this was the most I enjoyed watching a football game in a very, very long time. I pretty much loved just the entire concept of it. There are things they can improve on, but I absolutely loved this presentation. If it's something that becomes a yearly thing, I think it's an event to look forward to.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about, the slime zone and all the augmented reality graphics that they put on there. I was surprised at how good the slime zone actually looked. I thought it was going to look kind of cartoonish, which, I mean, it did, but it actually blended really well with the field. The AR graphics for that were fantastic. The timing on that was fantastic. As soon as somebody crossed the goal line, then, fucking slime all over the field. That was great. On top of that, it was the enthusiasm from the whole crew. I think that was infectious. The enthusiasm from the players who got to participate in this. I think they all seemed to enjoy it. Sean Payton got involved in this too, even though he wasn't all that familiar, but he volunteered to get slimed after the game because his team won. So so he had fun with that too. And I think that was something that they, like, he said he was going to do, and then nobody thought that he was actually going to go through with it, and he did. So I think this was just a nice, fun thing. And so I'm looking forward to next year's version of this. I'm actually looking forward to, because I think other sports have their eye on this as well. And that's, you know, as far as like a long-term implications beyond football, I'm interested to see, you know, what is Major League Baseball going to do to respond to this? Are they going to have similar experiences like this? I know I can't quite imagine them doing this, but maybe I could imagine the NBA messing around with this concept a little bit. I could imagine, I could imagine auto racing.
You know who needs it? NHL, because the NHL needs something to fucking help them out. So they should be the first ones like knocking on Nickelodeon's door.
And at the very least, I know it's not a new concept to do the noob broadcast. I think Dota 2 was kind of the pioneer on that. I would say the pioneers on that were Pat Summerall and John Madden, because I think that was an announcing crew that was very appealing. And John Madden and his general goofiness, despite being a head coach that was entrenched in the system, managed
and a super informative guy, which is why like he became synonymous with the football video game because of how like actually knowledgeable he is about football.
A man could diagram a play, and he could also diagram the process that they use to hide the Gatorade bath from the head coach that they're about to dump it on. And then he used his telestrator for all that. And so I think maybe it's just nostalgia, but you know, that was the guy that we had growing up, that made the game fun for us. There's plenty of people that do a good job commentating, making the game fun for people who watch football now. I know people love Tony Romo for that. I think people love John Gruden for that. And Chris Collinsworth is kind of just solid. But I think they're still missing that appeal to the younger audience that I think we had when we were kids. I'm excited for what this can be for football in general and for sports in general. All right, so let's move on to the NFL head coaching news. Doug Peterson, who we talked about in all this controversy around Carson Wentz and Jalen Hurts, he's been fired. So he doesn't have to deal with that anymore. Mm-hmm. He's been fired by the Eagles. The Jaguars hired Urban Meyer from the college, from the retired college ranks to be their head coach. The Jets hired Robert Saleh from the 49ers, so I'm sad to see him go. But that is a tremendous hire by the Jets, who to go from Adam Gates to Robert Saleh, I think that's a tremendous upgrade. We will never stop piling on Adam Gase on this channel. The other hire from this week is Arthur Smith, who was the Tennessee Titans offensive coordinator. So another hire from the coordinator ranks. The remaining head coaching vacancies are the Chargers, Lions, Eagles, and Texans. DGM put in here as a note that the New Orleans assistant head coach slash tight ends head coach, or sorry, tight ends coach Dan Campbell is kind of penciled in as a potential hire for the Detroit Lions. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about missing out on Robert Saleh?
I kind of don't care. All right. By all accounts, Robert Saleh did interview with the Lions, but they weren't exactly enamored with him. But they seemed to be more into Dan Campbell and Brad Staley, who's the defensive coordinator for the Los Angeles Rams, who is all from the same organization as new Lions GM Brad Holmes. I think that the one thing that I do like about Dan Campbell, since it's looking like he's going to be the guy, is that he has head coaching experience. He was the interim head coach in Miami after they let Adam Gase go. And he went 5-7, which, you know, when you're an interim head coach, not terrible. And yeah, he was the assistant head coach to Sean Payton, so he's learned from a really good head coach. I can get that. I'm okay with that. So, you know, I'm for me, when it comes to a new coach and a new general manager, I kind of feel like they all need 2 years. They need a draft class, and they need to be able to implement what they want to do. So if this is their guy, fine. Let's just see it play out.
All right. I think as far as the Robert Saleh hire, or missing out on that, I feel like a lot of teams that needed defensive upgrades missed out on him. As a reminder, I think last year the 49ers defense was fantastic. This offseason, he lost a bunch of people to injury and to free agency, and still turned out a pretty fantastic defense, even though it was the offensive side of the ball that kind of fell apart for the 49ers. So I think that was the appeal there. Urban Meyer, just, you know, fame from the college level. That's what's driving that hire.
Yeah. That's one of those guys I thought could, but I never thought would.
Yeah. I think this is his first foray into the NFL. So I guess good luck to him.
Because we haven't seen many successful.
Pete Carroll, I think, is the only one that has successfully made that transition. DJM also brings up the fact that the entire league has kind of gone quiet on Eric Bieniemy again. This is, again, Patrick Mahomes' offensive coordinator the offensive coordinator in for the Kansas City Chiefs, I think, who we've been talking about since last season, should have had a head coaching job for a long time. In fact, Deshaun Watson in Houston said this is the guy he wants. And on top of that, the ownership group in Houston has initially told Deshaun Watson that he would be involved in the head coaching search, or at least he'd be allowed to have input on that. And they have since backtracked on that, which has really pissed him off. So Deshaun Watson is mad. He wants a trade, I think. So as far as potential quarterbacks for the 49ers next year, that's the guy I want. And I will, you know, if it were up to me, I would back up the truck full of draft picks to get him. This is, you know, I mean, that is the quarterback, at least the available quarterback, that every team should want right now. Mm-hmm. It's at the point where guys like JJ Watt, who is still on the team, he's telling Deshaun Watson that he is sorry that they wasted one of the prime years of his career. when you have, you know, your elder statesman on the defensive side of the ball telling your leader on the offensive side of the ball stuff like that, then that's a bad situation. So, bad juju all around in Houston. That's what you get for cheating in baseball. That's how it works.
I love how much you bring this around.
The Astros didn't get punished, so yeah. The punishment has to get spread all the way around. JJ Watt apparently isn't too happy either, so he might get traded soon.
I'm surprised. Well, like JJ Watt, I think, is kind of one of those guys very similar to, I can't think of the name of the person I was going for, so I'm going to stick with JJ Watt, that he's just going to make the best of the situation that he's in, right? Like, that's just the kind of guy he is. He's just he'd rather lead the men around him than look for the best opportunity for himself.
He's the kind of guy that comes out and says, and I think he's said similar things to this before, but he's the kind of guy that goes into a press conference and says, you're getting paid millions of dollars to do this. And if that is not enough to motivate you to come out and play, then you shouldn't be here.
And then he looks around and says, oh shit, it's really fucked up around here. This isn't good at all.
If he's mad, then you know shit's bad. So that's an ongoing developing situation that I hope ends with Deshaun Watson on the 49ers, but may end with something else happening. We'll have to keep you guys updated on that. We'll have to wait and see on the rest of these coaching vacancies as well.
Texting the Giants front office right now.
And this Eric Bieniemy situation is pretty fucked up as well. It's just ongoing with this guy missing out on opportunity after opportunity.
You'd have to give up a lot to get Deshaun Watson. You'd have to give up a lot.
Daniel Jones.
And your first round picks for the next 4 years.
That's how I feel about the 49ers picks as well. Just take them. Take all of them. Because that upgrade.
I get it, guys. But that's a lot. I hear you. I hear you. Okay.
Because for the Giants, right? Like, in any opportunity where they could get Deshaun Watson without having to give up a bunch of other positional players, if all we'd have to give up is Daniel Jones and picks, take them. Because I think the rest of that roster is ready.
Matt Stafford plus picks for Deshaun Watson. You know you'd do it. Even if it was 4 first round picks.
Nah, the Lions need the picks. The Lions need the picks. The defense is Chernobyl. The defense is an apocalyptic wasteland. Like, they need the picks. The Lions need the picks. Like, that's not a joke. Right.
Well, speaking of apocalyptic wastelands, the U.S. Capitol was involved in an ongoing coup last week. The result of that has implications in the sports world, with everybody now, after bending over backwards to try to please the president and being afraid that he's going to tweet something mad about them. Everybody's now running in the opposite direction, and the president is banned from Twitter, and the PGA of America has decided to move the 2022 PGA Championship away from the Trump National Golf Club, where it was initially awarded. Apparently that has made the president more mad than anything else that has happened this last couple weeks. It's just really weird to see. I guess it's not weird. I guess it's kind of expected, but you know, between the NFL and every other sport just trying to toe the line and you know, please the president so that he won't tweet something mad about them and affect their viewership. Now he can't tweet anything at all. And now he's radioactive. It's just strange story on top of strange story. You can find out more about it. We've got a Vanity Fair article, and I'm sure there's plenty of other sources covering this stuff as well. The golf story that I want to get to, though, is I didn't know that this was a thing, but have you guys ever heard of the condor in golf?
I think so, and I think I only know about it from a Tiger Woods video game.
Oh, okay.
I knew of the albatross, and I didn't think it could get any further. I didn't even know before this story that there was a par 6. I didn't even know you could do that.
I definitely did not know that.
I think they're very few and far between. Like they're rare, like very rare.
Yeah. So Just to explain to the fly-by-night sports fans, par is kind of that's the target for the amount of strokes that you're supposed to make on a particular golf hole. Yeah. So the really long holes are
generally par five.
Are par fives. Those are supposed to take, I think, three big swings to get onto the green, and then two putts in order to finish up. That's the expected number of strokes. The if you get one less, that's called a birdie. If you get two less, that's called an eagle. If you get three less, it's either I've heard it as double eagle, but as DJM mentioned, that's also called an albatross. If you get four less, that is a condor, and I guess that's because they're so rare. Naturally, it's hard to get four less on a par three, and you can't do that on a par four either. You can only really get a condor hitting a hole in one on a par five, which takes a tremendous amount of strength. It's very rare, but it happens. It's happened like a handful of times, apparently, local guy around me, somebody in the East Bay, has hit a two-shot condor on a par six for the first time ever. So I think that is definitely something to celebrate. Basically, both of his shots basically disappeared from his vision after he hit them. He just hit two fantastic long drives. On this hole, in a golf course around the Oakland Hills, the Lake Chabot Golf Course, 649 yards is how long the hole was, and his second shot I think had to go up a hill, so it basically went over the hill, and then he heard a bunch of people cheering, I think he didn't realize until afterwards how rare that nobody has ever actually done this before, to finish a par six in two strokes. So now everybody knows what a condor is. Everybody knows that that this is the first ever two-shot condor. The condor itself is so rare that the PGA doesn't actually have like a list of who's achieved it.
Like I said, it's one of those things, like golf courses put that out there like so rarely that they'll make a par six, because it takes up so much space, right? Like a par six, you could have two different plays for the amount of golf course you take up for that par six, which is another reason some people don't do it. So it's just a really rare thing. Like,
I just can't imagine somebody hitting 600 some yards in two strokes. Like, that's three football fields per stroke.
Some of the good guys can hit like a good 300 something, you know. So
yeah, and I think, again, not a golf expert, but I think that was part of what made Tiger Woods so tremendous during his early years, was just his ability to drive the ball a lot further than everybody else could, and a putting game that was competent enough to capitalize on that. Some of these golfers are getting a lot better, and the technology is getting better, so we're seeing a lot of milestones kind of fall by the wayside, and this is one of them. So this is a 54-year-old guy from Castro Valley, California. So if he can do it, then this is so rare that like we're not seeing professionals do stuff like this. So it's just roughly 12,000 to 1 odds for hitting just a hole in one in general. But these things are even more rare than holes in one. A double eagle is 1,000,000 to 1 odds. This is I'm sure the Condor itself is so rare you can't even really calculate the odds.
No.
And then the two-shot Condor, even more rare on top of that. So, glad to end this show on a good note like that. Thank you all for listening. Head on over to sportsoddsandends.com to find links to all of our show notes, and also links to iTunes, Google Podcasts, and all the different places where you can find podcasts. Thank you all who subscribe. Thank you to all of you, all of our patrons, patreon.com/sportsoddsandends if you want to support the show financially. Yeah. Thank you all for listening. We will see you next time.